Welcome again to the Wrestling Eye Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Alan Blackstock, and we're joined today by podcast machine and Sheetie Award winner, Chris Zellner. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. How about you, Alan?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming on there to do this show. I'm quite excited to do this. So we've got you on today to talk Johnny Mr. Wrestling 2 Walker, whose career is someone you know quite a little bit about. You've pushed for him in the past. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I wrote a long, long piece that was on the Wrestling Observer website, some pro wrestling only message board. So, yeah, there's all the meat is in that. So if you want to read that, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, that was the only candidate probably in the Hall of Fame that I've done that for. And the reason why I did that is because I felt like I had probably maybe a better perspective on him than a lot of other people did. So I wanted to try to push that out there.
I think to me, the similarities with me with you pushing for him is with me with Big Daddy, whereas you know you've kind of pushed for him because you've understood his career. You've lived in Georgia, I presume, all your life.
Oh yeah.
So you've kind of understood his significance in the area and how that pertains to kind of this argument. Same with me with and a few others with Big Daddy. So there's some interesting comparisons to be drawn there. So before we start getting into the meat of the discussion, as always at the start of the show, I'm just going to say what the criteria is for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame as outlined by Dave Meltzer in the ballot that he sends out to people each year. So the criteria of the Hall of Fame is a combination of drawing power, being a great in-ring performer or excelling in one's field in pro wrestling, as well as having historical significance in a positive manner. A candidate should either have something to offer in all three categories or be something so outstanding in one or two of the categories that they deserve inclusion. So that's basically how Dave's outlined it. And as always as well, before we record the show, we'll do a little poll on Twitter, seeing what people think. And you might be interested to know this, Chris, that 45% of people have asked should Johnny Mr. Wrestling 2 Walker be inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016. 45% said yes and 55% said no. So that's quite interesting. Hopefully you can convince a few of the people who voted to kind of change their opinion based on what you have to say. So we'll get to the start, really. So in terms of Mr. Wrestling 2 or Johnny Walker, because we have to kind of cover his whole career. Can you give him just a brief outline of his career in 5 minutes, really, to people who've never really heard of him?
Well, he had two careers. One basically as himself, Johnny Rubberman Walker, and then one as Mr. Wrestling 2. And the first part of his career, he was basically like I wouldn't say mid-carder, but I mean, he would get main events and he just bounced around from territory to territory, mainly in the South. And he would be spotlighted in territories like Memphis or the Nick Gulas territory or Florida, territories that were more friendlier to guys that were his size, since he was, you know, basically a junior heavyweight, you know, a little bit more sometimes than falling in the heavyweight. So he bounced around that way. He looked older than what he was. That was one of his problems. He's one of these guys that, even though he was, you know, kind of young, he was young in the business, but he looked older than what he was. But he was a great worker, and everybody knew that. He could do things in the ring that few could. That's where the rubber man name came from. So he was a great hand and stuff like that, but he found second life when he became Mr. Wrestling, Tim Woods' protege in Georgia. Mr. Wrestling was a huge star here. Tim Woods was a big-time star, and they figured that they could catch lightning in the bottle and create a second version as Tim Woods decided to go to different territories or whatever. I think he went to Florida eventually. I know he ended up going to Crockett in the late 70s. And they amassed him, too. Yeah, they decided to create Mr. Wrestling 2. And I think the main thing at first, though, was to create the protege so they could turn him and do a feud, which they actually did. And it was a pretty big deal at the time that Mr. Wrestling versus Mr. Wrestling 2. But eventually, two turned babyface. But the main reason why he turned heel was Tim Woods was getting all the world title shots. And Wrestling 2 wasn't. Wrestling 2 was like, I'm better than this guy is. So I should be getting the title shot. So that's why they started feuding. And like I said, the feud didn't last very long. I think it only lasted like 5 or 6 months. And then after that, Wrestling 2 just became just a mega star. He was facing the world champion constantly. He was in all kinds of big feuds. He became a major star on television in Atlanta at a time when Channel 17 was just beginning to get penetration outside of its area. It was expanding out, and of course it would become the Superstation, you know, later on in the 70s. But one of Mr. Wrestling 2's most famous fans was the sitting governor at the time, Jimmy Carter, who had become the president in 1976. His mother, Miss Lillian, and she, huge wrestling fan. And once Jimmy got elected president, you know, she tried to have Mr. Wrestling 2 come to the White House. And the story goes where he shows up and Secret Service wouldn't let him in because he wouldn't take his mask off. So they had to do a special deal, you know, and they got it set up where I think he eventually got in. But yeah, he kept true to his gimmick and would not take his mask off. So not even to be in the White House.
Well, that's living the gimmick, isn't it? I mean, the photo is quite a famous photo, I think, of Jimmy Carter having him in a headlock, isn't there? I will put that in the show description, I think, as well. That's where a lot of people may have kind of seen him before. So, I mean, in terms of going through the Gordy list, which is 24 questions regarding someone's candidacy and if, you know, they feel they're a strong candidacy or not, based on kind of Terry Gordy, the argument with him at the time. So we'll start with the first question regarding that was he ever regarded as the best draw in the world or the best draw in the country or even in his promotion at any stage during his career?
Definitely a top draw in George Championship Wrestling for a amount of time. Top draw in the country, I would not say he was the top draw in the country. No. But was he a guy who could travel around and pop houses? Yes. And he did that. He would go to Mid-South in the early days of Mid-South. He went to Croc and went to Florida. They could put him in there, plug him in, and he could draw a house. Tommy Rich was probably a bigger draw than he was, but that was Tommy Rich took Wrestling 2's spot as the number one guy and in a time when the Superstation was really starting to bounce out. But like I said, Wrestling 2 was a huge star, though. I will say that.
Are we saying, would it be fair to say 77 to 81 were his peak years as a draw?
I go earlier. I go earlier than that. I'd say 75. 75 to 81, yeah.
So around that period.
Maybe 75 to 80. I'd do that. 75 to 80, because 80 was like his last big year as one of the top singles guys in Georgia. Like, of course, he would come back off and on, but that was like the last big time.
In terms of him being a draw, I mean, there is an argument that, you know, he sold out the Omni, but did he do it a lot of times? Was this week after week or show after show he was always selling out the Omni, or was it certain feuds that were kind of popping the house?
They ran Omni once a month in this era. So they didn't start running it every week until 1980 or every other week. Yeah, they ran the City Auditorium in downtown Atlanta. Okay. And they were popping that house every week.
Was he someone you could consider at the time working in Georgia, a homesteader, someone that wouldn't really, during that period, wouldn't go anywhere else? He was mainly based in Georgia area.
Yes and no. I mean, yeah, he spent his, you know, the bulk of his run there. Yeah, but like I said, he would be a special attraction. He would go to other territories in the South, but it was always in the South. It's like he never went to California or worked for Vern or worked for Vince or something like that. He was always in the Southern territories.
Do you think that hurts him at all, that he was, like you said, just only in the Southern territories and wasn't a draw elsewhere?
Probably. I mean, that exposure of being, you know, AWA and WWWF were in, you know, all the major top cities at that time, so it probably did.
I think for someone like himself, I mean, I've read arguments either way for his candidacy. So in terms of someone to kind of draw comparisons with, do you feel Yes or No is more impactful than, say, someone like Junkyard Dog down with Watts? You know, in terms of JYD jump started basically the territory down there to a greater degree than anything that Mr. Wrestling 2 did in Georgia. He drew absolutely huge houses, JYD. Do you think there's a comparison there to be had between the two?
Yes, I can see that. JYD, when he became the top star of Mid-South, I mean, that was a fledgling territory, even though they had, you know, Watts had been running there forever, McGuirt ran there, but Georgia had just came off of the split of All South and the NWA part, and they rebuilt that NWA part of the territory based around Mr. Wrestling, Tim Woods. But Wrestling 2 was right there not too long after that, and like I said, he became about a year later, a little over a year later, is when he started becoming one of the top guys. So, and then, like I said, he dominated the late 70s after that. So, yeah, there's a comparison that can be made.
Would you vote for JYD?
Definitely. Did last year.
Okay, so really, you're arguing something, you know, you're not arguing against yourself here at all. So
no,
I mean, that's totally fair enough. I mean, there's another argument going back to drawing as well, because I think this is an important area to cover on his career, or is kind of the argument for his candidacy. Is he was, for a few years, did really strong business with him on top, and there's no denying that. But would you argue, I would argue anyway, he wasn't the only reason for the hot business. At the time, Atlanta relied on importing bigger stars from all over the country to kind of load up those shows. So do you feel that there's other pieces to the puzzle in terms of the drawing in Georgia at the time?
Well, they brought in guys, but always the main views were your locals. And you're always, you know, the heels are always an important part of it too. And Wrestling 2 always had strong heels to go against. And that always played a factor in as well. But Wrestling 2 was such a dynamic personality that he was the – I mean, you can't say it was like Bob Backlund. You know, Wrestling 2 could cut a promo. He had charisma. He had all the other things that Backlund didn't have. So the argument that, oh, it was the heels that made Wrestling 2 – no, it was not the heels that made Wrestling 2. Wrestling 2 was – right there with them or on par. It was as far as importance or maybe more. So that I wouldn't say that it was the outsiders didn't have an effect, but at the end of the day, it's still Wrestling 2 that was the top guy for that period of time.
Okay. Well, in terms of top guy, would you say there's a certain age group it still to this day? So you asked anyone who's over 60 or over a certain age, if you said, have you heard of Mr. Wrestling 2, the likelihood of many people would be yes.
Depends on the part of the country, I think.
I mean, you know, in your area.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, God. Yeah. If you like bring wrestling up to people of, let me think of a good age to start with. Probably in the 40s and higher, if you bring up wrestling, one of the first things that will always come up is Wrestling too, because he was just a local icon down here. I mean, when they were growing up watching, they would recount angles like the angle where Wrestling 2 got put out of action by Pac Song, and the angles with the fake Mr. Wrestling 2, the angles with Mass Superstar, all these different angles would come up. You know, and then you think about, yeah, Mr. Wrestling 2. Wrestling 2, guys like Wrestling 2, the Freebirds, Tommy Rich, the Assassin, you know, guys like that were around here that made big impacts. Yeah, he's going to come up, definitely.
And would you say he's one of the first national stars in the true sense of the word in terms of On TBS Superstation? I guess it's probably a good point to explain TBS and its impact on Georgia wrestling at the time and what it did for the promotion, if you're okay doing that.
Well, WTCG was Ted Turner's station, and it was just a local station in the early 70s, and they carried both, they carried the original version of George Chance Wrestling. Then the split happened, they carried both shows. And they carried both. Both shows now, and were they taped in the same building where they would run into each other at times? And that was always interesting, I'm sure, to have your outlaw talent against the other ones in the same building.
Well, just to explain, is this the split with Gunkel, the
yes.
Gunkel split?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and Ted Turner and Ann Gunkel were romantically linked in this era as well.
Oh, wow, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that was going on. But, of course, you know, All South didn't last a couple of years, and they folded up because they couldn't beat the NWA's business, and Wrestling 2 was one of those reasons why. But as the 70s grew on, they started to expand out as the age of satellite television, well, satellites beaming television stations and cable television was starting to rise here. Ted Turner had the foresight to get his channel on those satellites, and it started beaming the different markets. And as time went on, it started going more and more places. I know Dave about how I think the first time he saw Georgia Championship Wrestling was like 1977, 78 in the Bay Area. So they started, you know, started going out, and wrestling was, it was two things that really made that channel was wrestling the Atlanta Braves. And they were on par with each other. And that's one of the main reasons why wrestling stayed on TBS as long as it did, is because Ted Turner knows that without wrestling, TBS, who knows where it would have been.
Well, that's a really important point. I mean, so was Mr. Wrestling 2 then based on this? Was he realistically, forget the magazines, for someone that's on TV, was he one of the first true national stars of this era?
Yes, I would say that.
Through natural penetration, not through magazines and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah, more people were able to see him than a lot of other guys, definitely. Definitely.
Okay, well, just to explain it as well, I'm led to believe as well, though, that much less than 50% of homes in the US could carry cable still in 1980. So, I mean, the coverage, would it be fair to say it's something like ROH syndicated TV now, you know, to kind of explain it to modern day terms?
Probably something like that, yeah.
Okay.
I can get behind that type of analogy, yeah. It's certain places had it, just like certain places have Ring of Honor television. You know, not everybody has.
So, getting more into his actual working now, Chris, at any point was he regarded one of the best workers in the world or in the country or even, you know, in Georgia?
Georgia, definitely. Country, probably not at the top level. But, you know, when he was younger, he definitely was, you know, considered one of the best guys. Around the world, probably not. I wouldn't go that high. No.
Okay. Who would you say, if anyone wants to check out some of his matches, who his better matches against?
You see, that's the tough one. Because most of your footage on Wrestling 2 that's available are of him at the, well, I wouldn't say tail end, but the last 10 years of his career. And he didn't. That's one thing about television in that era is you didn't have a lot of big matches on television. It was always squash matches or highlights of arena matches. So I would, if you wanted, Mid-South probably would be the best way to go, because he had some better matches on Mid-South television, 82, 83, when he was there the first time they came back, and when he turned heel on Magnum TA in 84. I mean, that would be the best way to go. Is Mid-South matches. I know him and Tyler Conway Jr. had a successful tag team going against Ted DiBiase and Matt Bourne. I know they had good matches. Wrestling 2 had the match with JYD where he won the North American title, which everybody should see that match just for the ending, because that was a controversial ending that almost, well, basically killed New Orleans. Then the Wrestling 2 Magnum TA series. There was some good stuff. That would be the best stuff to watch. And you got to remember, at that time, he's in his mid-40s.
Yeah, no, he was getting on in years then. I mean, yeah, I've put together, like I've done with the other shows, a playlist of, not everything, obviously, because all this footage, like you said, isn't out there, but the footage I have got, including that fantastic promo that, you know, is quite famous. He does with Wrestling 1 with the Assassins.
One of the all-time great promos.
Yeah, and we'll get into his kind of promo ability in a bit. But yeah, that sort of stuff. You can check all that out on, if you go to tinyurl.com/playlistwrestling. So that's Playlist Wrestling. You can check out that and lots of other playlists as well. So yeah, I mean, the stuff I've seen of him, I've really enjoyed. And there's, you know, I do want to dive a little bit deeper into that. But unfortunately, there isn't that much footage out there. But there is, interestingly, I have found a house show match that was pro-taped of his from Georgia. I've forgotten who it's against, but that's that's going to be on the playlist as well. I'm sounding vague, but I can't remember who that's against.
I think
actually.
That was Mass Superstar, wasn't it?
I think you could be right.
Probably
actually.
From Columbus. That would have been from Columbus, Georgia. That's when. Yeah, those are on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone should check them out as well. So getting back to his worker, how many years did he have as his best years as a worker? Not his best years as a draw necessarily.
Best years as a worker. Oh my goodness.
From what you've heard, what's his earlier career like as a worker? I mean, he did have some kind of NWA title shots in his first career as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean he had a lot of success early on.
Because I want to break that narrative, you know, that he was just nothing until, you know, he was given this gimmick.
And the thing was, he was a heel, too. So, I mean, he was a heel, a journeyman heel wrestler. Lutez was defending against him numerous times in the 60s. When he worked in Florida as the grappler in 1971, the original grappler, he was a big, big time name there.
So they must have trusted him to, you know, kind of be a good worker, you know, to put him in these matches.
Yeah, I'd probably say I'd say mid-60s to 1980.
Okay, that's quite a long time where he was, you know, working quite well. What was his style of wrestling like for people who have not seen him?
Kind of, I'd say it's not mat heavy, but it's kind of like that old school style that a lot of guys have from that era. He could hit you with some strikes. It's sort of like an old school way of doing things. Of course, the knee lift was what everybody, you know, wanted to see, the $1 million knee lift. That was his finisher. And, just a lot of basic stuff. He didn't do a lot of, flashy stuff, in that time period, but what we have, you know, like I said, Rubberman era, who knows, you know, we don't have that footage, but, the fans loved him, though. The one thing about, you know, if you watch old TV matches of him in Techwood, especially when there's a lot, you know, a lot of a lot of black children there, black folks there, they always chant two upside your head, two upside your head. They love wrestling two was like a god to them. So, yeah, that's what he was. I mean, he was just, you know, no frills. Sometimes just go in there and just take it to guys. Maybe kind of like the early version of Ronnie Garvin in some ways, although not as stiff.
Okay. So I think could he brawl when it was needed to as well?
Oh, yes.
I mean, I've seen, you know, reading through your excellent piece we mentioned before, he feuded with Stan Hansen in, you know, the late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm led to believe some of those matches were wild.
Dick Slater, Pac Song. I mean, he had big time feuds. All the Andersons. He would always have gimmick matches. He always held his own in those. He feuded with everybody. You know, that was so big. So
was he the anchor? Was he the main man in Georgia? Completely definitely. Number one. Yeah, definitely. And that time frame, was that still, like you said, 75 to 80, or was that a little bit shorter when he was number one? Because we had Tommy Rich coming in as well, didn't we?
I'd say 70. When he left Georgia in April 79.
Okay.
That's when he went to work for Watts. And we won the North American title from Ernie Ladd in February. So that's the thing about – that's another story that we got to tell about this was Bill Watts – you know, and creating Mid-South, put his title on Wrestling 2 and brought him in to be the early star of Mid-South Wrestling.
Is that why he jumped? Was there any other reason as well?
Yes. He became the number one guy there for almost the rest of the year. He would come into Georgia and here and there, but he was the top babyface in Mid-South.
And was he effective in that role in Mid-South as well?
He was effective in helping it draw. I mean, becoming it was him and Watts that were, of course, were the two top baby faces, and there were other guys too that was involved. But yeah, he was one of the definite catalysts before Junkyard Dog, you know, became the phenomenon he did.
And then at that point, was he phased down the cards in Mid-South?
He just left basically. He lost his North American title and left and went back to Georgia. Because that's when you started the Fate Mr. Wrestling 2 feud.
And at that time, was he still valuable to Georgia during the second run when he came back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was in key angles. That's when the 1980s, when they did the champion of champions stuff, where he beat Harley Race for the world title, but they did a deal where he couldn't be the world champion because he wouldn't take his mask off. And that's when they created the champion of champions cup, where Wrestling 2 says, I beat the world champion, so I'm the real champion. And of course, Harley Race would beat him later on for the trophy to unify everything. But yeah, definitely. He was him and Tommy Roach were right there neck and neck pretty much that year until Wrestle 2 left.
And Tommy Rich obviously continued on and was, you know, was Tommy Rich hotter at any point, would you say, than Wrestling 2?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But Tommy Rich had a lot of things going for him that Wrestle 2 didn't. He was younger. He was unmasked. He could, you know, he had the women. That Wrestle 2 wasn't a matinee idol. So it's different. It's a totally different scenario there.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that Wrestling 2 was the top American babyface masked wrestler in history? Is there anyone else who, an American, you could argue was, you know, as popular as he was? I mean, throwing that one out there, because I thought about this before, and
probably not as far as a nationwide figure. Tim Woods was definitely up there for a short amount of time, the original Mr. Wrestling, but as far as like the nationwide deal, no. And I'm not counting Mil Máscaras.
No, because we're talking an American full on who works.
Yeah, Wrestling 2 has that, definitely.
Okay. Getting on to his career now in terms of his mic ability, working storylines and angles, how effective did you feel he was on the mic to get himself and, you know, what his storyline and opponents over?
Extremely effective. He was one of the best. I mean, he was very articulate in his promos. He knew exactly when to turn that anger up. He was a very, very, very solid talker, very effective, and one of the things that he's known for the most. So, yeah, he was one of the best promo men in the business for many years. When he was heel, he was a tremendous promo. He was awesome as a heel.
Is there anyone modern-ish who you could kind of compare him to for people who've not seen him in his promos yet?
Wow.
His kind of style, is there any delivery? Because obviously it's a totally different kettle of fish from, you know, now, so it's unfair to compare.
Yeah.
You can't compare that, but anyone a few years later that kind of emulated his style or his promo delivery or delivered, you know, things in a similar style? Or was he unique enough that he did it his own certain way?
It was just like that old school style of, you know, being very credible, very believable in everything he said. Sometimes no nonsense. I mean, that it wasn't for show. It wasn't like a Dusty Rhodes promo or something like that. It was just, he went out there and he told you what he felt and how he did it. He would start out, you know, pretty soft spoken, and then he would raise it up when he needed to be raised up. I mean, it was just that old school way of doing things. There's nobody today that cuts those type of promos. So I really couldn't think of anybody to compare him to.
That's fair enough. I mean, he's got a great voice as well on him, hasn't he? He's the way he sounds. He sounds like a kind of wild pro
always
dressed
wrestler. In suits. Yeah. I mean, mask and suits is awesome.
Yeah, he's wearing. There's one though. He's I think it's the Assassin's video. It's another one I've seen where he's. He takes his suit jacket off. He's wearing a short sleeve shirt and a clip-on.
Oh yeah, he loved wearing that short sleeve shirt in the summertime, no doubt.
That short sleeve shirt and a clip-on tie as well, which I thought was fantastic. So yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed what I've seen of him so far, face and heel. I mean, he played both roles really effectively during his career. As a heel, what do you think his best work was?
Mid-South, definitely. I mean, that's the crowning goal of his career, and to me, crowning achievement is working Mid-South, being the guy that basically made Magnum TA. I mean, that feud made Magnum TA a big star Mid-South, and told that story of, you know, the basically kind of a reverse version of Wrestling to a Mr. Wrestling, you know, where the reverse version being the mentor. Was, you know, the heel and the student was the face. So, yeah, that would be the best one. Now, he did some stuff in Continental that was really good, too.
This is later on, isn't it?
Yeah, this is lit. Yeah, this is like the he went to WWF for a while and just did nothing. Well, he didn't do nothing. He just languished on the undercard.
Why did they bring him into WWF? Is that kind of be a draw in the South?
Yeah, to use him there, but I mean, he wasn't never used in a high position. It was always in mid card or lower card matches, but basically to keep him away from other people. That's basically what they were doing at that time with a lot of guys. And he left there and went to the Continental. Was a member of the Stud Stable for a few weeks. Had really good stuff with Bob Armstrong was the Bullet. So that was some good heel work there by wrestling too as well. So yeah, he was at 84, 86, that area. Yeah, he was a really good heel.
I mean, there's some of that stuff as well in the playlist I've put together, including he worked some tags up in New York quite a bit, I think, as well during that run. Do you think that's hurt him at all, thinking about it? Or the people, hopefully people should see that that was done for other reasons, and it shouldn't really be counted against his career.
It probably hurt him in a lot of people's eyes that were Northeast fans, because he was a guy that, we've heard about Mr. Wrestling too, and now we see him, he's working job matches. He worked Madison Square Garden for the first time in November 25th, 1985. And
And
I
how
guess
old was he then? He must have
Terry
been.
Funk.
How old was he
Oh
in?
God, he was in his early 50s or maybe mid-50s.
Well, that's quite interesting as a stat. Is there anyone that old who's debuted before in the Garden?
I couldn't tell you. But
So, I mean, that just shows his longevity, though. I mean, if he was still being used at that age.
yeah, and basically, before then he was used in the Georgia towns or whenever Georgia ran on northern tours as a name guy, and he started working more northeast. I know we have a match with him and Savage at the Meadowlands, from July 1985. So I mean, he could still do things, but his way he was portrayed, that probably hurt him in people's eyes.
Is that the biggest thing that's hurt him? What do you think's kept him, his level at the moment? I mean, can you? I've not got the figure in front of me, unfortunately. What did he get last year as a percentage? Do you
It
know off the top
wasn't
of your
high.
head?
It wasn't high. I think 20s maybe, or in the high teens or something like that.
Is it what's hurting him? Is stronger candidates on the ballot, or just people who have discounted his impact in the territory of Georgia, do you think?
Yeah, that's part. I mean, there's a lot of factors into it. I mean, you have a lot of your voters are, the voter base is starting to get younger and younger, and guys like wrestling too are not being seen, by a lot of these guys. And I don't know. It's just a lot of factors involved in it. I mean, his peers, they're not a lot of them that probably even are in the process, and a lot of them's died. So that's another thing too. I mean, it's just a lot of factors involved.
I mean, it's a shame, really, because the one thing I dug up during my research of him was he headlined more than 20 shows that did over 10,000, people ha 10,000 tickets sold, which I think's,
That we know
yeah,
of.
that we know of him in terms of research, and that's nothing that you can look at lightly because in terms of people, I can argue with, I can say, look at Big Daddy, he drew three houses, were fairly big, 10,000 plus. He never went back again after that. There's other reasons why, but three versus 20, and I'm there, and I'll arguably in the face that Big Daddy should be in the Hall of Fame for a variety of reasons, as a draw as well, and that's one of my arguments. And comparing him to wrestling too, I mean, over 20 houses, and in and he's getting 20 odd percent where Daddy's getting up into the 40s. I think it's quite interesting to kind of see contrast and compare the two there. I went going into this research, I wasn't that strongly against, for him. I am stronger for him now than I was before. I am still on the fence. So, what is the major argument for you why he should be in, Chris? Above other candidates on the ballot in the historical section.
Being a major star in an era when wrestling was growing, as far as then the territories and I mean on television, and being a guy who could anchored one of the most successful wrestling promotions of the era, and like I said, being dependent on by Bill Watts to help grow his fledgling Mid-South promotion. So I think there's two major feathers in his cap. Influence. A lot of people were influenced by wrestling to the $1 million knee lift. A lot of people would use that after him or use a variation of it. His high profile matches that he was on. I mean, he was a big time television star of that era as far as wrestling.
Well, talking about his kind of influence there, you mentioned the $1 million knee lift. I think the Mr. Wrestling 2 gimmick, I don't think it's, I guess it's a really poor thing, but has there been any more Mr. Wrestlings after him?
Oh, God, yeah.
Who have we had?
There's been all kinds of Mr. Wrestlings. Well, Steve Corino is doing Mr. Wrestling 3 in Ring of Honor right now.
Exactly. That's what I wanted you to kind of the segue there. So it's still relevant, you know, even to a small point.
Yeah.
There's still kind of something going on there in current wrestling. So there is that point there, even if it's a small point. So I think, you know, the $1 million knee lift, and I think the point you made about, you summed up there was, and we're going to sum up again in a minute, is he was a launch pad. I mean, he was a launch pad to build Georgia into the territory that it was, you know, and it was red hot. Let's not, you know, put a finer point on it. Georgia, between 77 to 80, 81, was absolutely red hot. And some of that, a lot to do with that, was down to, you know, Mr. Wrestling 2. And I think that's a huge argument for him. You know, that right there. He was an excellent promo. He was a good worker. He was, you know, he could play a variety of roles, face and heel. He worked, you know, different areas of the country, and he was relied on. He was a great worker from what we've heard before. He was a good worker afterwards. So there's a lot of things there, you know, to support him. You know, I think I've summed that up quite well myself there. But I think there's a lot of arguments. Is there anyone else on the ballot now you'd vote ahead of him in this category?
Well, let's see. I voted for JYD. God, I'm trying to remember who else in the category.
We've got people like, we've got Pepper Gomez.
No.
We've got Bob Ellis.
No.
We've got Tolos.
No.
Who've we got then in the category? Let me pull it up. I mean, the historical category, he's only gone on there in the last few years, is that right?
Yeah.
Because he moved over, didn't he?
Yes.
Right, so we've got here, we've got Wrestling 1.
I put him over Wrestling 1 because of longevity.
Okay, Wilbur Snyder.
Oh, definitely over Wilbur Snyder.
Cyclone Negro.
Yes, definitely.
June Byers.
Yes, totally, yes.
Red Bastien.
Yes, Red okay. Bastien was great, but not... He was more of a tag team guy.
Okay. The Assassins have gone in now, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they've gone in. Who else have we got here?
Wrestling 2's long-time rival, too, the Assassin.
Do you think that's him, his rivalry with... was it both of the Assassins?
No, it was Assassin 1.
So that was Joey Hamilton, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Tom Ernesto had... he was the booker for All South, so he never came back.
Okay.
To change wrestling.
So everyone I mentioned there, I mean, the only person, Enrique Torres, you know, I don't know how you feel about him.
Well, I mean,
is that another discussion for another day?
Well, Enrique Torres, you know, he died. So, I mean, not died, but he died later on. But Enrique Torres, the guy, he was a 50s star, you know, and... I mean, I know he was a big time star in Southern California and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's just, it's all stories and stuff like that. And sometimes it's kind of hard for me to do that, you know, to get into that more than what I've seen.
Is there anyone else on the ballot, you think, apart from JYD, that was as impactful on a territory, you know, and as culturally famous, who's not in yet?
Whew, that's on the ballot now.
Yeah, I mean, we've got people, I don't know, I can't see anyone jumping out, really.
Well, Kerry's back on the ballot.
Yeah, Kerry, well, that's an interesting one, actually. I'm glad you brought that one up. Kerry is back on the ballot, and he's been brought by recently. I mean, he was white hot, as you know, arguably hotter than Wrestling 2 was at the time. So maybe him. But there's other pieces of the puzzle that Wrestling 2 that Kerry didn't have that I think Wrestling 2 does have.
Well, and Kerry had, you know, the brothers and stuff like that, and a lot of feuds, but he was always like, you know, I guess the de facto guy, you know, because he was the guy that won the world title. So, but yeah.
His run was a lot shorter as well than Wrestling 2's, being Johnny Rubberman Walker all the way up to. When did he retire? Was he after the Continental run?
Oh, God. Wrestling 2 retired in 89? Wow. No, well, it was... Is it 89 or 90? Because 89, he was working the gimmick where he was the mentor to Ranger Ross for Jerry Blackwell in Southern Championship Wrestling.
So that was 33 or 34-year career.
Yeah.
And, I mean, interesting side note, just about his career, if you want to tell the story, how did he actually become Wrestling 2? What was he doing at the time?
That's a great story. He semi-retired and was running the gas station outside of Atlanta when the promoter, Paul Jones, came up to him that Leo Garibaldi was the booker, wanted to make the new version of Mr. Wrestling. You know, it was to give, like I said, to give that extra boost in this war against Angonco. And they decided, well, you know, Johnny Walker would be a good guy to do it. You know, he'd wear that mask. Nobody would know that he's, you know, an older man for that time period as far as like being somebody in a new gimmick. So, yeah, we'll put him in that. And he agreed to it. And I think it's February the 2nd, 1973. That's when he debuted. And another thing, too, is they couldn't get Tim Woods really to come in as much because he was the top guy in Florida. Working a mask, by the way.
Oh, so,
yeah, so he was the top guy in Florida because he had then lost his mask there. But
so
he
got pretty big pretty quick Wrestling, too, because he was having world title shots year.
Well, 11 days after he debuted, he was already in the semifinal. And so, in 1 month, he became the Georgia Heavyweight Champion, beating Sputnik Monroe.
So from the get-go, he was, you know, featured heavily, pushed heavily, yeah. And, you know, went from there.
10-time Georgia Heavyweight Champion, too.
10-time is, well, basically held that more than anyone then, I presume.
I would say so, yes. Okay. If he wasn't there, I couldn't think of anybody that held it more than he did.
Is there any reason to believe that he was better or worse than he appeared?
Oh, wow. Is that as far as like a working or what is
just in general perception. So, you know, people...
I think a lot of people will like joke on his body. Because Wrestling 2, as he got older, his body kind of looked old. And
he was older, you know, at the end of the
day. Yeah, he was older. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a guy that was, you know, basically hitting the gym. I mean, he just had that, just a regular style body. But, and he was a shorter fellow. He wasn't a tall guy. And, I mean, it's just, it was a product of the times. He probably, I tell you this, if he was around today, I would be interested to see how he would, although you know, guys smaller to get over today more, you know, they did for a while there, but it definitely be interesting to see him try to, you know, like 1974 version of him in today's climate.
Yeah, that would be interesting how he would, you know, get over, you know, nowadays. It'd be something unique. I mean, anyone who, you know, like that would cut a promo like that would stand out, you know, in a good way nowadays. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see stuff like that, you know, much anymore, the way things are. So just to wrap it up then, Chris, I just want to thank you for, you know, coming on the show. Wrestling 2, going through then, that was interesting for me and an eye-opener there, going through, you know, some of the candidates who are on the ballot as well in the historical section. I've not really dipped into the historical section. If I was going to, you know, have a mock vote, I don't have a, you know, a vote in the Hall of Fame at the moment. If I, in a mock vote, I'd stay clear of that section. But, you know, as I go through the podcasts, I'm going to be discussing all these different candidates and, you know, I'm going to learn, you know, more about each of them. But I think at the moment, you have convinced me, you know, that Wrestling 2 in that category at the moment is one of the stronger, if not the strongest candidate. So I just want to thank you for kind of having you on and, you know, fleshing that out with me. Is there anything else you want to add at all to anyone else who would still be on the fence, or have you kind of covered everything you wish about, you know, his career or his candidacy?
You know, the one thing, and I hate to say this because it's morbid, but it's probably true, is that whenever Mr. Wrestling 2 does pass away and Dave does that obituary, if he's on the Hall of Fame then, by then, I think that the obituary would probably help him the most to get in.
No, I
And
think
that's
you're
sad
right.
to say,
It is
but
sad to say, but it's true, isn't it? We've seen that
we've seen
before.
that. Yeah, we've seen that before. So, I mean, he would probably have his best showing after that happened.
Well, we see
But
it not just from anything like death. It's like with Daniel Bryan. I'm not wouldn't vote for him this next year personally, for reasons that we discussed on the last podcast. But I know he will more than likely get in due to the fact he's retired now.
Yeah, and I'll vote for him now because he's retired. Because I don't like to vote for anybody that's active. But yeah, I mean, I think he deserves to be in. But and Wrestling 2 is 81 years old. He'll be 82 on September the 10th. He lives in Hawaii, as far as I know. He's still doing really good. So maybe I hope he doesn't die for another 20 something years.
Well, I hope, fingers crossed. Is he still coming out to any of the meet and greets at all? Has he done any in the last few years?
He does some here and there, but you don't see it that much. You know, he actually won. He came out of retirement in 2007.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in for Hawaii Championship Wrestling, where he teamed up with Steve Corino as Mr. Wrestling 3.
Ah, so is that the link then? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they won the Hawaiian Heritage Tag Titles.
Wow, that's wild. So it'd have been, what, 72, 73, something like that at the time.
Yeah.
Wow,
Another
that's.
thing that got mentioned about wrestling too, as well, is his wife may have had as big of an impact in wrestling as he did some in one way, in only one way, because his wife Olivia Walker is the woman that makes all of Ric Flair's robes.
Wow, you know what? Now that you've said that, I've heard the name that make you know I've heard that before, but I didn't piece it together. You know, based on the research and everything I've done. So that's a wild little fact there that she did. And did she do them up until he retired, Flair, and he, you know, or he had enough? He didn't get them made from anywhere else.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, she was the exclusive one that made all of his robes.
Wow. So that's a cool little fact, like I said. So I've had a blast on today's show, Chris. So thank you so much for going through the career of wrestling too. And I can understand from your point of view, you know, growing up and living in Georgia, how big he was. You know, for you, did you ever get to see him live?
Yes. Yes, I did. When I was a young boy, he worked at the Omni, this was before WWF. And, I'm trying to remember who he worked against. Les Thornton. No,
Journeyman
yeah,
Junior.
another very good worker. And they had a good match on television. Probably the best WWF on TBS television match they had when they were on there in that era. So, and I think that might be on YouTube. I don't know, but everybody should check that out if they can. But yeah, that's when I seen him. I've seen him work independent shows, but yeah, that's the one that I've seen. I remember, seeing. I was 5 years old. And
It's still cool that you've seen him, and you know, at the time, same with me with Big Daddy. Going back to him, you know, with someone who was big in the eight at the time when you were growing up watching wrestling. I was about 5 or 6, and I saw him at the time. Wasn't good matches from from memory. I bet wrestling too in 80 in the mid 80s was better than Big Daddy in the big 80s. That's for sure. But no, thank you so much for coming on. And how can people check you out? Because like I said at the start of the show, you're a podcast machine. So what are you up to at the moment?
Well, let's see. Between the Sheets every Monday. This last show covered 1992, February 23rd to 29, 1992. Talking about Super Bowl II.
Oh, one of my favorite pay-per-views.
Yeah, WWF scandals starting to hit the fan, stuff like that. Exile on Bad Street, the other podcast. The last show that's out there is the show with Scott Hudson and Steve Prazak. The next show that should be dropping, I don't know, if, maybe it'll be dropped by the time this comes out, is with Bo James on the first year of Continental Championship Wrestling, which we talk about Mr. Wrestling too.
Awesome.
So
I mean,
that's coming out next.
well, you underplay these shows. These shows are absolutely fantastic to anyone who's not, you know, not heard them. You can check these out in the Place to Be Nation. Is that right?
Yeah, and lately I've become a regular on Talking Sheet Midweek on SheetSandwich.com, where I get to talk about the current stuff. So, yeah,
Which
I
is a
love doing that
blast as
show.
well.
I
Which is
love
an
doing that
absolute
show.
blast. both of them. So I just want to thank you for coming on, Chris. And where can people, is anywhere on Twitter, anywhere people can follow you?
KRISZELLNER on Twitter. Check him out.
Hot takes on Twitter.
Yeah.
So people, check him out on Twitter as well. So, like I said, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show too today, and we're discussing wrestling too. And we're due to have you on again with another guest that we won't mention at the moment, that we had to postpone recording with last week. But I'll be sure to get you on for that as well, so we can discuss that off air. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you again after a while.